episode of the iDrop podcast. It is Monday, and it's funny when we look at everything here at the iDrop podcast, we look at our beginnings. Today's guest is one of the reasons why this podcast was started. He is the managing editor of Last Word on College Football. He also covers Wake Forest. Tony Siracusa, my friend, how are you?
I'm doing great, T. Biggs. How are you?
I am fantastic. Now, when we look at Wake Forest to me has always been interesting, but especially as of late, because no one really talks about them, but yet they turn out winning program. Now, they went 11-3 last year. Are they still the best team in the ACC? Or one of the best teams?
Not if you believe the voters in the ACC preseason poll. You know, when you say one of, I mean, the ACC preseason poll, which came out during the ACC media days last week, put Wake Forest at third in the Atlantic Division. But it's a pretty big gap between them and Clemson, who was the projected champion for the Atlantic Division and the projected ACC champion, because Clemson had 111 first place votes. Wake Forest had 6, and North Carolina State is wedged in between them, but still with only 44 votes. Look, the thing about Wake Forest that you correctly point out is because they don't have this tremendous history of winning football, and really the turnaround has been during the Dave Clawson era, and really to that, even in the last 3 to 4 years, there's a lot outside of North Carolina, outside of the triad, that really doesn't pay much attention to Wake Forest. Clawson actually feeds on that a little bit. He laughs and he smiles like he's joking when he, you know, tells the media, hey, if we keep winning, sooner or later, you'll just forget to put us on the ballot because we're never getting your love, right? And so he kind of feeds off it, but he kind of means it also. And he kind of uses that a little bit that, you know, forget the outside voices. We're never going to get that. As you said, they went 11-3 last year. They won the Atlantic Division. They lost to Pitt in the conference championship game, but then they won the Gator Bowl. That is, and it was a historic season for Wake. One of the 2 to 3 best seasons they've had in program history. And yet you go back and you look at what happened last week and they were still picked to finish no better than third in their own division.
Now with Coach Clawson, it's interesting because he this year actually breaks a trend as far as career. Every other time he's won 10 games, be it 2013 with Bowling Green or 2007 with Richmond, or actually the second time, I guess, 2003 with Fordham. They won 10 games, he has left for another job. What makes him such a perfect fit for the Deacons?
You know, I think part of what it is understanding what Wake Forest is. And it's funny, we talk about, you know, the triangle in North Carolina, where so much of the focus is on North Carolina, North Carolina State, certainly Duke basketball, and Wake Forest comes in somewhere after that. There are, you know, there's so much fan attention on some of the other schools. Clawson gets that. Clawson also gets that Wake Forest has some limitations. The donor base is never going to be massive because the undergrad population at Wake Forest is only about 4,500. It is a very small school. Also, one of the more academically challenging schools in the country and certainly one of the hardest to get into, there are going to be players you're never going to get because you don't have those leniencies to get players in who don't qualify academically. Clawson gets that. And he gets that he's never going to be able to use the transfer portal to beef up his roster. He can maybe get a couple players a year, but you have to qualify for the Wake Forest academic part of it before you can even think about playing football. So he understands those limitations. As a result, he maximizes what he has. He really tries to keep people tight, keep them within. Case in point, quarterback Sam Hartman, going into his fifth year, started a handful of games his freshman year, but is one of the very few fifth-year quarterbacks who has played his entire career at the same program. You know, especially in the day and age of even before the transfer portal, when you could transfer and file waivers for eligibility. Now with the transfer portal, you can be immediately eligible. Hartman has never even thought about it. He's a Charlotte kid and has never thought about going somewhere else for other opportunities or brighter lights. This is a kid who is very happy with his choice at Wake Forest. Made the comment last week at ACC Media Day about the change in culture that he's seen over his 5 years at Wake Forest, which was before you had to be a really smart guy and maybe you played football as well. Now you're a really good football player to be able to play there, and you have to be really smart. That's a significant change in culture. And again, I can only think off the top of my head, covering college football across the entire country, I can only think of probably three or four quarterbacks who are in their fifth year with the same program who have been starting multiple years over that time period.
One of the things I like about Hartman is he's not the prototypical build for a quarterback, but he wins and he shows immense heart. He doesn't get rattled. He takes vicious hits, but pulls himself up, throws a decent ball, and has the respect and admiration of his team when he's in that huddle. He looks like he's in complete control, and his words to his team are not to be questioned. This is how it is. But yet, the teammates, the offense makes plays for this man. What about his character transfers?
Yeah, I think you point out something really interesting, which is, you know, most quarterbacks are expected to be the leader of the team, certainly on the field, and if you're a coach, you hope off the field. It's a little bit different with Hartman because he has a certain intensity about him. He's not going to yell, you know, run up and down the field. He's not going to take the team flag and, you know, stick it in the ground at midfield. You know, he's not going to do those things. However, we were told by a couple of players in the spring camp that Sam has expectations of himself and of everybody else. His expectations of himself are much higher than most people's. But then he also has, you know, similar expectations of everybody else on the team. And they said he will get on you if you are not doing the work. Now, you make mistakes, fine, whatever. Everybody makes mistakes. You keep making the same ones, there's a problem. But if you're not doing the work day in and day out, and this was a direct quote, I don't remember who it was from now, but, you know, because it was back in spring. But the point was, you could be his roommate, his best friend, or an incoming freshman that he barely knows, and he will get on you. But after he gets on you, he will say, hey, look, man, let's go spend some extra time in the film room tomorrow, and let's see if we can figure this out and work it out. The term coach on the field gets a little bit trite for me after all these years and gets a little overused. But when you have a quarterback who will take any player on the team, again, his roommate, his best friend, or an incoming freshman, and go to the film room or go to the practice field and get in that extra work so that they're not making those mistakes anymore, that is indicative of a leader. And I think that that's how you get the respect of your teammates.
Now, when I look at the offense, the offensive line, four of their starters have combined 90 starts. What does it speak to the offense that pretty much four-fifths of the line knows what they're doing at all times, and how you see other schools will tend to have a hiccup here and there as far as the smoothness of a certain drive? When Hartman brings his team to the line of scrimmage, and in your years of covering this sport, what do you notice different?
I think that every coach says they want to have depth, right? You want depth is the key. You got to have good guys behind the starters. But we actually talked to Dave Clawson today. Wake Forest fall camp actually started today, Monday. And we talked to him about what some of the goals were. And it was very specific to the offensive line, the defensive line as well, but really talking about being able to have what he termed 50 players over the line. In other words, he said, I know who my starters are at most positions. Now, does that mean there's not a competition in most positions? Yes, it does mean that, because this team is so experienced. It's so senior laden. As you pointed out, there are so many guys on the offensive line with so many starts under their belt already. And you get a guy like Michael Juergens, the center, you know, another fifth-year player who's been starting for a few years now. And so they get it, and they're in that rhythm, and they're in that rhythm with Sam. The point after that becomes, if someone goes down, we got to think about who to replace him with, but we know who's up next. We know what's next. There were several offensive linemen missing from spring camp because they had injuries late in the season or even at the end of the season that needed surgery, physical therapy, rehab, whatever the case was. So they sat out spring camp. Wake Forest played later into the year than they usually do. Like the Gator Bowl was after New Year's. Wake Forest generally isn't still playing at that point on the calendar. So they had the chance in spring to figure out who these guys were, who were going to, you know, they were going to get a lot of snaps in spring, knowing that they are going to be second or maybe even third string once fall is here, but they had a chance to really show themselves. So Clawson has really built a system of extraordinary depth. And with that, you get the ball players who they don't have to be told as much about the finer details. They know, they've been doing it. They get what they're supposed to do. They get what their job is, and they're able to kind of bring along the younger players and put them under their wings and help guide them along as well. And that's what Clawson, it's taken a handful of years. And, you know, it's interesting when we talk about Clawson, because I had an interview during the summer with athletic director John Curry, and Clawson was here 7 years before they had that great season last year. And I asked Curry, with no disrespect to Wake Forest, is it because it was Wake Forest that Clawson got that kind of latitude that many years? You and I cover the sport day in and day out. We both know it's 3-4 years. You better produce or you're out. Is it different because it was Wake Forest? The expectations are different, and he was allowed more time to build. And Curry absolutely agreed. That's not to belittle the football program at Wake Forest, but because of what it had been through, because it hadn't had this decades of success, Clawson had the time to build. And now what you're seeing in the last 2, 3, 4 years, that building equals depth on the roster.
Now, when we come back from break, I want to talk about the rest of the offense, because there's a player on the offense that I think that college football, outside of Sam Hartman, who everyone should pay attention to, but there's a player that has captured the attention in the offseason, possibly poised for a big year, but that's after break. You're listening to the Ad Drop Podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with Ad Drop Podcast. Here is Big Tony Siracusa from Last Word on College Football. Tony, I want to talk about one of my favorite players, A.T. Perry. A.T. Perry, for those who don't know, is a big-bodied wideout, about 6'4"-ish, 6'5"-ish, I think. Last year, these numbers are mind-boggling, and the film bears it. 71 catches, 1,293 yards, 15 touchdown receptions, averaging just a tick over 18.2 yards per catch. How can he build upon this?
You know, it's funny. When you and I, you know, were talking about doing this segment today, I had no idea you were going to bring up A.T. Perry. But here's the funny thing. I talked to A.T. Perry today after practice. I talked to him on Monday after practice. He is a big physical kid. When you stand next to him, you know, look, receivers are tall, they're lanky, whatever the case may be. He's a big kid, very physically well-built. What you see with Perry during the seven or during the full scrimmages or the 7-on-7 drills is his ability to separate from the defensive back. It's not that he's got blazing speed and he just blows by everybody. He's got precise moves. He's got very good footwork. He's got very deceptive cuts. And so he can put himself behind the defensive backs with I don't want to say with great ease, but with a smoothness that kind of belies, you know, his speed and his athletic ability. He looks very smooth out there. He's going to be able, in my estimation, to really be even more valuable this year because he's going to have a lot of help. They're bringing back Donovan Green, who missed last year with an injury. And Donovan Green, as a receiver, is a physical beast. Again, talking to him today, and you look at the work he did. He blew out his knee during the summer last year and has spent, you know, the last 12 months rehabbing, rebuilding, doing all of that after the surgery. And he talked about his physical ability because he's always had a good upper body, but his legs didn't really have the durability that you would want in a receiver. And he said because he had to rehab his knee, all of his focus was on the lower body. And you look at him today, and he looks like he's got to shake off the rust a little bit. He hasn't played full-speed football since last summer. But, man, he looked really good out there. And so you put the two of them together, and really that's going to be able to help Perry because you're not going to be able to have defenses or the defensive backs really hone in on him. There's a multitude of receivers with Wake that is going to, again, we talk about depth. That depth is going to help somebody like Perry.
Now, another player on the offense that should possibly factor again this year is Taylor Morgan. Do you see him more of trying to kick inside the slot because you have Green and Perry on the outside? And do you think his number of catches will increase from, well, he had 43 last year. Do you think those numbers will increase, or do you think that the yardage instead of the catch will increase because now he'll be occupying the third or fourth best corner on that defense?
Well, I think with Taylor, what you see is he's built very differently than Green or than Perry, and he is, as you point out, very much more of a slot receiver, guy who's going to be able to go over the middle. He's physical. He's not tall. He's not blazing fast, but he is physical. So he can go over the middle. He can take the hit. He can take the contact. And again, it adds diversity to the offense. It adds so many different options to what Hartman can do, to what Clawson can do with the offense. So yeah, I see him as, you know, again, making the defense adjust to what Wake is doing instead of being able to key in on one player.
Now, I know that Wake will tend to spread things out, but do you think a tight end like Blake Whitehart will see his number of passes, or do you think it's more of a just trying to find the receivers on the perimeter?
No, I think Whitehart's going to be very valuable. It really is. I mean, look, this is not an offense that's built around throwing to a tight end, you know, underneath. It just isn't built that way. But when you watch the offense, when you watch it in spring and you watch it now with, you know, really pretty much everybody back from injuries and rehab and physical therapy and whatnot, and you see it in we didn't really see it in full speed day one because it's day one. They weren't in pads, you know, typical first day of fall camp. But you can see the motion and you can see the options and you can see Hartman going through his progressions on the different plays. And so absolutely, I mean, the tight end, and they can go 2-3 deep at the tight end position. So again, you know, you're looking at options, you're looking at diversity, and you're looking at, you know, does someone like Perry not get as many yards, maybe not get as many catches because they have so many weapons to utilize? Maybe, you know, but is the production out of him, whether it be with touchdowns or whether it be with big plays, is that going to be there? Because, again, they have so many options. Yeah, you can definitely see where that's going to happen.
If we switch over to defense, in the last few years, Wake has had a decent amount of draftable talent, be it Ejiofor, the pass rusher. Along his lines, you have a player in Rondell Bothroyd who came into his own as far as he had 7 sacks, which is a career high. He's going to, I think, his 4th season as a Demon Deacon. Do you think that this is the year that he will, one, tally double-digit sacks, and two, who will be on the other side to give him some help?
I think the first place you're going to see him get help is the change in defensive schemes, because, you know, look, the Wake defense last year was, and I realize we're talking about, you know, the pass rushing and things like that, but just overall, because the defense has got to work cohesively, the defense last year was ranked 91st in the country overall. And it really wasn't very good. It was one of the worst in the country against the rush. It was a very passive defense. And so Clawson went out and brought in Brad Lambert as the new defensive coordinator. And the point was to create that more aggressive scheme. He was Lambert actually has a history at Wake. He was at Wake from 2001, I'm going to say, to about 2010 in different capacities, and was defensive coordinator part of that time. But he was the defensive coordinator at Purdue last year, and the Boilermakers were one of the top 50 defenses in the country. He brought in Glenn Spencer with him as the new linebackers coach. He brought in James Adams as a defensive backs coach. Adams, by the way, is actually a former Wake player, graduated back in 2006. But the point that you're seeing with the defense all around is much more aggressiveness. You're seeing not sitting back and waiting and adjusting to what the offense does. You're seeing, especially in the spring, again, with fall having just started today, especially in the spring, you are seeing the defensive line get into the backfield quite more often towards the end of camp. And so, you know, what that tells you is at early on in spring, the offense was purposely slowing down a little bit. They weren't going full speed because they needed to give the defense time to adjust to the new schemes. Clawson called it having to learn to go from checkers to chess. By the end of camp, they were playing chess. Everything was full speed. Everybody was all in, and they had adjusted accordingly. So I think you're going to see, again, that more a little bit more pressure. You're also going to get guys like Kobe Turner on the defensive line who probably, you know, should have a big impact. But I also think you're going to get a lot of help from the linebackers. You're going to see a guy like Ryan Smenda really step up because everything is a forward motion defense.
Now, they struggled mightily versus the run last year, and it just defense struggled overall. I want to discuss one of the players that kind of jumped out a little bit was Kalen Carson. Do you think that the defensive scheme, it'll help up front, but also it should help the secondary? What does Kalen Carson's skill set bring to the new scheme?
Look, he's a physical defensive back, and right now, one of the things that's helping the defensive backs may not look like it every day in camp is they're going against such a talented group of receivers every day, working with Sam Hartman, the veteran quarterback, in practice every day. You know, you have that old football cliche, you know, of what is it, iron sharpens iron, whatever it is. It's, you know, coaching cliche. But the point being, he's a very physical defensive back. You see him bumping up against the receivers. You see him maintaining contact with them. And so doing it against this high end of a receiver group is really going to hone in. Right now, the defensive backs are getting beat on long balls sometimes. I'd say probably 2 out of every 5 long throws, they're getting beat, but it's contention for the ball. In other words, they're not getting beat that the defensive or that the receiver got 10 yards behind them. It's that contested catch. And so that physical ability is going to play well when he's getting in against other teams.
Now, when we look at the schedule, and with the defense only 11, they won 11 last year. Is 12 in the realm, or should they kind of focus on that 9-11 type of barrier for this team?
I think if they got to 12, you'd have Dave Clawson taking the microphone and saying, "You all still won't give us enough credit." you know, because we're awake. I think 12 is probably a pipe dream. You know, they should obviously come out of their out of conference games unscathed. When you're playing VMI and Liberty and Army, you should be able to come out unscathed. But you look at some of the key games they've got. They've got Clemson at home in week four, which is, you know, you've got to circle that on your calendar. You know, Wake hasn't beaten Clemson in 14 years. And you look at, you can't, I don't think you can count on Clemson having the, everyone says Clemson had a bad year last year. You know, Clemson went, what, 10-3? It really yes. wasn't that bad. But they didn't win the division. They didn't win the conference. And they didn't go to the college football playoffs. So in Clemson land, it was a bad year. I don't think you can count on Clemson having that bad of a season again. Again, putting the term bad in air quotes. You know, I think you look at their quarterback, DJ Uiagalelei, and at ACC Media Days last week, you had Dabo Swinney admitting that they – that, yes, he made mistakes. All young quarterbacks do, but they did a poor job around him so that the mistakes were magnified. I don't think you're going to see that poor of an effort again from Uiagalelei or the offense. So I think you got to keep an eye on Clemson. They've got NC State on the road in early November, and every Wake Forest fan circles that NC State game every year. It's one of the oldest rivalries in the country. I think probably a lot of people don't know that. It's actually been played every year since 1910. And I think a lot of college football fans, because it's, you know, out in, you know, Winston-Salem or out in Raleigh, that a lot of college football fans don't realize what that rivalry is all about. As a matter of fact, this is the last year that the ACC will have the divisions of the conference. And next year they go without division play. And the NC State Wake Forest matchup was broken up so that it won't be played every year, which is unfortunate and really didn't sit well with Dave Clawson. When you talk about the three teams that they will play every year at their rivalry set, NC State wasn't one of them, and it didn't sit well with anybody at Wake Forest. And NC State has one of the best quarterbacks in the conference in Devin Leary. It was actually the preseason player of the year selection for the ACC. And so, and that alone right there, again, kind of going full circle to where we started at the beginning with Dave Clawson and the lack of recognition for Wake Forest. The fact that Devin Leary was the preseason player of the year instead of Sam Hartman has already set off, you know, a lot of Wake Forest fans with a lot of thoughts on that. And so, and as you go through the conference and you look at it and you look at some of the matchups, this is a really good quarterback conference. Really some of, from top to bottom, just so much depth at the quarterback position. And so I don't, so with that alone, I think, you know, you get a quarterback on a hot day, you know, he's got a hot arm. He's in that rhythm. And I think 12-0, you know, becomes kind of crazy. But you look just, you know, up and down the ACC, and you got Brennan Armstrong from Virginia, or you've got Leary, or you've got Hartman, you've got Uiagalelei. It really is, you know, a tremendous quarterback conference. So it's it should be, you know, a really fun season in the ACC. A lot of challenges for Wake, but I think, you know, another 8, 9, 10 win season and throw in a bowl game win is not out of the realm of possibility. And I think that they should be able to compete for the ACC Atlantic title. Again, I don't think you're going to see Clemson be as off as they were last year. You've got NC State, which returns a lot of talent. You know, they're missing one of their best players in Ike Ekwonu, who went to the NFL. But still a lot of talent returning. So the Atlantic is a tough race. It is a tough race from top to bottom. But I think that Wake should be very competitive for the top 2 to 3 spots.
Now, what is coming up on the last word on college football, and how can people interact with you on social media?
Absolutely. Last Word on College Football. You go to lastwordoncollegesports.com and you click on the college football link. We've been having a lot of fun this summer and we're wrapping it up. It's funny when you're like, you go to college, those college football media days, and they're in the middle of July or the end of July. And the coaches always say, well, we hope everybody had a good summer and enjoyed the summer. And, you know, it's 90 degrees and it's the third week of July, but that's where the college football calendar works, right? Training camp starts in August, and so summer is over at that point. We've been having a lot of fun looking at the best returning players by position in every conference. And we did the Power Five and decided the response from the audience was so good that we're doing it over the Group of Five conferences also as a whole. We're not doing each conference, but the best returning players for the Group of Five teams as well. So we've got that going on. We're taking a deep look into training camps now that they've started this week all across the country. We actually today posted our first preseason Heisman polling that the writers for Last Word on College Football put together. And so you should go check that out. So you've got lastwordoncollegesports.com with the college football link. We've got a Facebook page. We've got a Twitter feed at lastwordoncfb. And if they want to interact with me, they can find me on Twitter at Tony Bruin.
One of the sharpest college minds out there, Tony Siracusa, thank you so much for joining us on the Ad Drop Podcast.
Always a pleasure to work with you.
This has been the Ad Drop Podcast.